Imagine logging onto your corporate network. You navigate to, like, a trusted university research portal to read an article, and you encounter a standard, everyday CAPI-TCJ prompt asking you to prove you're human.
Right, something we all do a dozen times a day.
Exactly. So you follow the instructions, and the fraction of the second it takes you to hit enter, you've just handed over complete control of your workstation to a remote command server. Welcome to the deep dive.
It is a totally terrifying reality. And it's happening right now at a really unprecedented scale.
Yeah. So today's daily cybersecurity briefing is all about extracting the signal from the noise. We've taken a massive stack of recent threat intelligence reports. We're diving deep into technical analysis from Keyaxine XLab, Checkpoint, Palo Alto Networks Unit 42, and Google Mandiant.
That is a lot of heavy hitters to synthesize.
For sure. And we're bringing you the practical takeaways from the top three stories in the landscape today. And, you know, looking through these reports, the overarching theme is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
Modern threat actors are weaponizing our fundamental trust in the digital ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, we rely on this really fragile set of assumptions to navigate the web, right? We assume a well-known university website is safe.
Right.
We assume the top search result on Bing or DuckDuckGo for developer software is, you know, the legitimate vendor. We assume enterprise software companies secure the core configuration files they ship to us.
But they don't always do that.
No, they don't. And attackers aren't just breaking firewalls anymore. They are turning those exact assumptions into the primary attack vector.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting with a massive campaign exploiting Ghost CMS. Ghost is a highly popular open source content management system used by millions.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And the vulnerability in the spotlight is CVE-2026-26980.
Mm.
This carries a CVSS score of 9.4 out of 10. That is the alarms blaring red alert tier.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a critical SQL injection flaw in Ghost's content API. And a detail that really stands out here is that this flaw was actually discovered by Anthropic using their AI model, Claude, to audit the code.
Which is wild. Having an AI model uncover a 9.4 severity zero day is, well, it's a huge milestone for automated security research.
Yeah, for sure.
It was responsibly disclosed, and Ghost actually issued a patch back in February 2026. But the gap between a patch being released and a patch being applied across the internet, that is where threat actors thrive.
Right, because nobody patches immediately.
Exactly. So attackers figured out that this specific SQL injection allows an unauthenticated user to read arbitrary data directly from the underlying database.
Wait, so they just bypass the login screen entirely?
Yes, they bypass it completely and trick the database into handing over the crown jewel of the system, which is the site's admin API key.
Wow, so they aren't just reading data at that point. Once you hold the admin API key, the front door isn't just unlocking. I mean, you own the building.
You really do.
You can write, edit, and delete anything on the platform.
Which leads to what Tianxin XLab describes as this massive automated poisoning campaign. Attackers are using those stolen admin API keys to tamper with published articles in bulk.
Just modifying legitimate content.
Exactly. They inject malicious JavaScript loaders right at the bottom of the pages. And they've done this across more than 700 legitimate sites.
That's huge.
Yeah. We're seeing university websites compromised, blockchain platforms, SaaS providers, fintech companies, and ironically, even security research blogs.
That perfectly illustrates the weaponization of trust. I mean, if I go to a fintech company's official blog to read a white paper, my guard is completely down. I trust the domain.
Right. You're not expecting malware on a legitimate blog.
But let's look at the delivery mechanism here, because the evasion techniques are incredibly intricate. They don't just, like, dump the malware on the page for everyone to see.
Right? No, they are highly selective. The injected JavaScript is a two-stage loader. It reaches out to an external domain, specifically a .dicyz domain, to pull down the main payload only when the page actually loads.
Okay, so it's dynamic.
Yes, like clo4shara.xyz.
Oh.
But the attackers have a major problem, right? Security scanners, automated web crawlers, and antivirus bots are constantly scraping these sites.
And if a scanner sees the payload, the site gets blacklisted immediately.
Exactly. To solve this, the attackers route the traffic through a commercial cloaking service called AdSpect.
It's like a burglar, not just breaking into a publishing house, but stealing the printing press to add a poisonous postscript to every single book.
That is a perfect way to visualize it.
And so this AdSpect cloaking service acts like a corrupt bouncer at an exclusive club. When the automated security scanners, you know, the cops in this scenario walk up to the door, the bouncer turns the sign to closed and shows them a completely empty, benign web page.
Nothing to see here.
Right.
Nothing to see here.
That is exactly how it functions. AdSpec collects browser fingerprint information, so it looks at screen resolution, installed fonts, user agent strings, execution speeds.
The really detailed stuff.
Yeah. And it analyzes all of that in milliseconds to determine if the visitor is a bot or a real human. If it's a security bot, it serves the benign page.
But if it's a human?
The second a real human patron walks up, the bouncer slips them through the back door and serves the malicious payload. And that payload is what researchers are calling a click-fix trap.
Yes.
The user is browsing a trusted site, and suddenly a KPCHA verification page pops up. It tells them to prove they are human. But instead of clicking pictures of crosswalks or traffic lights, the prompt instructs you to copy a Base64 encoded command and paste it directly into your Windows Run dialog or PowerShell terminal.
Which is wild. It exploits a really dangerous blind spot in user awareness. Base64 is a way of taking complex binary data or executable code and translating it into a standard string of alphanumeric characters.
So to a developer, it's obviously a known encoding method.
Right. But to the average user, a Base64 string just looks like a random, unique verification token, like a one-time password. They don't realize they are copying a highly obfuscated executable command.
I have to challenge this premise, though. We have spent over a decade drilling it into users' heads. Don't click weird links. Don't download strange attachments.
I know.
And you're telling me a pop-up asking a user to open the literal Windows command line and paste a string of code isn't setting off massive alarm bells. Why would any user actually paste a random code into a run dialog? Are we seeing social engineering completely outpace our technical defenses here?
It is entirely about the UI design and the context manipulation.
Really? Just the design?
Yeah. The user is on a site they trust implicitly. The KPTHA prompt perfectly mimics the styling of legitimate security checks we see every single day. The attackers are weaponizing the friction of the modern web.
Fatigue.
Exactly. Users are so exhausted by constant verifications that they just go on autopilot. They just want to read the article they clicked on.
Okay, so they paste the code into the run dialog and hit enter. What is actually happening under the hood when that executes?
So the Base64 string acts as a dropper. It immediately downloads a ZIP archive from a remote server, extracts a hidden Windows batch script, and executes it.
Just automatic.
Right. That script then triggers PowerShell to reach out to yet another remote domain to pull down the final payload. And the architecture is highly modular.
What do you mean by modular in this case?
Well, sometimes it uses the legitimate Rundle32.exe process to launch a PuTTY client DLL that actually carries a valid code signing certificate.
Oh, wow. So it slips right past standard antivirus software.
Exactly. Other times, it drops an Inno setup installer for a modified remote access tool like the Grape desktop app.
Establishing deep persistence on the machine.
Yes. And once established, it beacons out to an attacker-controlled server in this campaign, hosted on a .ugg domain like webtelegram.ugg every 30 seconds.
Just waiting for instructions.
Right, waiting for the operators to send remote commands, whether that's deploying ransomware or stealing credentials.
So what's the takeaway here for the people listening?
For any IT professionals listening, the technical mitigation is straightforward. Upgrade your Ghost CMS instances and rotate all credentials immediately. You also need to audit your access logs.
But the human element is much harder.
It really is. User awareness training has to fundamentally change. Employees must be explicitly taught that the Windows Run dialog and the PowerShell terminal are just as dangerous as an infected email attachment. They have to know the dangers of copying and pasting commands to bypass human verification screens.
Yeah, that makes sense. We've just seen how attackers hijack legitimate, trusted sites to trick users. But what happens when the attackers don't bother hijacking an existing site and instead use the tools we trust the most, our search engines, to build a completely fake reality from scratch?
If the Ghost CMS attack relied on hijacking legitimate sites to trick users, our next threat actor didn't just hijack trust, they used AI to rapidly build fake software ecosystems from scratch. That brings us to our second threat actor, Nimbus Manticore.
Right, Nimbus Manticore. Also tracked in the industry as UNC 1549 or Screening Serpents.
Yeah.
This is a highly sophisticated Iranian state-sponsored group affiliated with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And a new report from Checkpoint highlights that their operations accelerated sharply following the joint U.S.-Israeli military campaign in late February 2026. And obviously, we are impartially reporting the facts from the threat intel here, not taking any political sides.
Absolutely. We just follow the data. But the velocity of their tactical evolution is staggering. Before the conflict escalated, Nimbus Manticore was running a highly targeted spear phishing campaign known as the Iranian Dream Job.
Oh, right. The Dream Job lures.
Yeah. They would target employees in the software and aviation sectors across the Middle East and Australia. They sent emails offering lucrative fake career opportunities.
And if the victim took the bait?
If the victim downloaded the attached ZIP file and clicked the seemingly benign executable, it deployed a backdoor called Minijunk.
And they deployed that backdoor using a technique called app domain hijacking. For our listeners who haven't dug into the weeds of Microsoft.NET architecture, how exactly are they forcing the application to load their malicious code instead of the legitimate processes?
Okay, so in the .NET framework, an app domain is essentially an isolated memory space where an application runs its code. It's supposed to keep processes separate and secure.
Makes sense.
But if an attacker can manipulate the configuration files that tell the application where to look for its dependencies, they can hijack that process. Think of an orchestra getting ready to play a symphony. The conductor, the application, trusts that the sheet music on the stands is the correct score.
So they just swap the music.
Right. App domain hijacking is the attacker sneaking in and swapping the sheet music right before the concert begins. The conductor plays the malicious music perfectly, thinking it's the legitimate symphony.
That's a highly targeted manual approach, though. But in March, right as the geopolitical conflict peaks, they pivot entirely.
They really do.
They ditch the dream job lures and shift to sending fake Zoom meeting invitations that drop a brand new, highly customized backdoor called MiniFast.
And Checkpoint's analysis strongly suggests this new MiniFast backdoor was not written by a human. It was developed with the assistance of artificial intelligence.
Wait, how can researchers actually look at compiled malware and confidently say an AI wrote it? What are the forensic markers there?
It comes down to the structural artifacts left behind in the code. MiniFast is, at its core, a relatively simple backdoor script. But it exhibits wildly excessive error handling and defensive programming logic.
Stuff a human wouldn't bother with.
Exactly. A human would rarely bother with that for such a small payload. The naming patterns for its functions and methods are highly descriptive, rigid, and repetitive. It includes verbose, debug-style status messages that overexplain every single action it takes. When you ask a large language model to write code, it tends to structure things like a textbook. It overexplains, overengineers, and rigidly organizes the logic, even for a quick and dirty script.
So they're using an AI as a co-pilot to rapidly iterate and write custom malware on the fly. That explains the speed.
Yes.
But the most alarming shift happened just a month later, in April. They abandoned the email phishing lures completely. No more fake job offers, no more Zoom invites. They moved to SEO poisoning.
A massive escalation.
Yeah, they built a totally fabricated download page for the popular database tool Oracle SQL Developer. They registered the domain getschooldeveloper.com, and they managed to push it to the very top of the search results on both Bing and DuckDuckGo.
SEO poisoning is a huge deal because it exploits the trust we place in algorithms. They registered dozens of separate domains that do nothing but link back to their fake Oracle download page.
Creating a fake web of trust.
Right. The search engine algorithms see all those inbound links and interpret them as a sign of high reputation and authority. So the algorithm ranks the fake malicious site higher than the actual legitimate Oracle website.
This is like a counterfeiter, setting up a fake bank branch right next to the real one and using an AI architect to build it overnight.
That's exactly what it is.
But if search engines are actively serving up malware as the top result, the whole check the URL advice is essentially dead. I mean, if state-sponsored actors are moving this fast, using SEO to bypass email security filters entirely, how on earth do organizations defend when the search engine itself, the tool developers use 100 times a day, becomes the primary delivery vector?
What's fascinating here is that it forces a massive shift in how security operations centers prioritize their defenses. You can no longer rely solely on perimeter defenses like email gateways, spam filters, or even DNS black holes.
Because the user is asking for it.
Exactly, because the attack is coming from a trusted, user-initiated web search for a legitimate tool. Defense has to shift to endpoint behavior monitoring.
So you have to assume the perimeter is already breached and watch what the software actually does once it's inside the house.
Precisely. If a developer downloads what they think is SQL Developer, but moments after installation, that application starts doing process enumeration, like scanning the system to see what antivirus is running, or it attempts privilege escalation via the Windows runes command to grant itself administrator rights. Your endpoint detection tools need to sever that connection and kill the process immediately.
I have to catch it in the act.
Yeah. The Minifest backdoor even randomizes the jitter value of its beaconing, meaning it changes the timing of how often it talks to the command server specifically to blend in with normal web traffic and avoid network monitoring tools.
And the broader impact here is really concerning. The target profile for these attacks expanded significantly. Palo Alto Networks Unit 42 confirmed that these SEO poisoning campaigns weren't just hitting targets in the Middle East anymore. They were successfully targeting U.S. oil and gas firms.
Which is incredibly concerning when you look at the physical world parallels unfolding right now. Iranian hackers recently breached automatic tank gauge systems, or ATGs, at several U.S. gas stations.
Wait, what are those systems exactly?
These are the systems that monitor fuel levels in the underground tanks. They were sitting online, exposed to the public internet, completely unprotected by passwords or firewalls.
Oh, that's bad. Did they cause damage?
The hackers didn't alter the actual fuel levels or cause physical damage, but they successfully tampered with the display readings on the tanks.
It's an intimidation tactic. They are planting a flag to say, you know, we have access to your critical infrastructure.
Exactly.
We've talked about state actors using AI to craft these highly targeted lures and using SEO to bypass filters. But what happens when the software is totally legitimate, downloaded directly from the official vendor, and it's still compromised from day one?
While state actors are using AI and SEO poisoning to craft highly targeted lures, our final story proves that sometimes a devastating breach doesn't require AI at all. It just requires a single vendor-supplied skeleton key left permanently under the doormat.
Let's get into it.
This brings us to our final report from Google Mandiant, and it is a textbook example of a devastating supply chain vulnerability. We're looking at CVE-2026-5426. It's a high-severity CVSS 7.5 zero-day vulnerability in Digital Knowledge Deliver.
Which is a wildly popular learning management system used heavily by corporations and universities in Japan.
Right.
And the root cause of this flaw is just mind-boggling. The vendor, Digital Knowledge, provided a standardized web.config file with their software installation package. And inside that configuration file, they left hard-coded ASP.NET machine keys.
That's unbelievable.
For the non-developers listening, what exactly is a web.config file, and why is leaving a machine key inside it a catastrophic mistake?
Okay, so a web.config file is basically the master instruction manual for a web application built on Microsoft's ASP.NET framework. It tells the server how to behave, how to handle security, and how to manage data.
The brains of the operation.
Exactly. The machine key within that file is a deeply sensitive cryptographic secret. It is used to encrypt and sign data, specifically something called view state.
And what's view state?
View state is the mechanism the application uses to persist page state across different requests.
So if I'm filling out a multi-page training form on this learning management system, view state is the memory bank that remembers what I typed on page one when I navigate to page two.
Exactly right. The server packages up your input, encrypts it using that machine key, and sends it to your browser. When you go to the next page, your browser sends it back.
And the server unpackages it.
Yes. The server uses the machine key to decrypt and deserialize the data, unpacking it to restore your session. But here is the fatal flaw, because the vendor shipped the exact same hard-coded machine key to every single one of their customers. Those keys aren't a secret.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If an attacker gets their hands on just one deployment, they have the master key for the entire global customer base.
It's like a contractor building 1,000 corporate headquarters, but putting the exact same master key lock on every single front door.
That is exactly what they did.
So they can manually craft a malicious view state payload, pack it full of executable commands, and send it to any internet-facing knowledge deliver server. Because the server shares that same hard-coded key, it blindly trusts the payload. It decrypts it and deserializes the commands straight into the system's memory,
resulting in unauthenticated remote code execution. The attacker doesn't need a username, they don't need a password, and they don't need to bypass a login screen.
They just walk right in.
Yep. And the attackers capitalized on this aggressively. Mandiant observed threat actors using this deserialization attack to drop the Godzilla web shell, sometimes tracked as Bluebeam.
And the web shell is basically what?
A web shell is essentially a graphical user interface for hackers to control a compromised server through a web browser. Once they installed Godzilla, they ran automated commands to grant the Everyone group complete, unrestricted access to the web application directory.
They didn't just pick the lock, they took the door entirely off its hinges. And the craziest part of this timeline is that Microsoft explicitly published a warning to the entire industry about the abuse of publicly disclosed ASP.NET machine keys back in February 2025.
Over a year before this campaign.
Yes. Yet vendors were still shipping them. If Microsoft warned the industry about these ASP.NET machine keys over a year ago, why are vendors still shipping standardized web.config files? Is the pursuit of easy deployment actively destroying foundational security?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it comes down to the constant friction between ease of deployment and foundational security. Vendors want their software to be frictionless. They want a customer to buy it, run the installer, and have it work out of the box in 5 minutes.
Right, because security adds steps.
Exactly. Generating unique, cryptographically secure keys during every individual installation adds complexity. It creates potential failure points for their customer support teams to deal with. So they take a shortcut, they hard code a shared secret into a template, and assume nobody will figure it out.
But they always figure it out.
Always. And as this knowledge deliver exploit proves, the risks of shared secrets and deployment templates are systemic. One leaked key compromises the entire ecosystem.
And once the attackers had full access to the directory, they got incredibly creative with how they targeted the end users.
They really did.
They tampered with the application's underlying JavaScript files. When a legitimate employee visited their company's compromised learning management system to do their mandatory training, the modified JavaScript triggered a highly realistic, faked security alert. It told the user they needed to install a security authentication plugin to continue.
There is that weaponization of trust again. You are logged into your company's official mandated training portal. It looks correct, the URL is correct, and it tells you to install a required security update.
They have no reason to doubt it.
Exactly. Almost every employee is going to click yes without a second thought.
Wait, when they click yes, the script reaches out to an attacker-controlled domain and drops a Cobalt Strike beacon directly onto the user's workstation.
And Google Mandiant noted a brilliant but chilling detail about that final payload, the Cobalt Strike beacon, was uniquely encrypted using a key that actually contained the name of the targeted organization.
Wow, they actually used the company's name.
Yes. They customized the final payload for the specific victim, ensuring it would only execute on that company's network, which makes it incredibly difficult for generic antivirus solutions to analyze or detonate the malware in a sandbox. They delivered a bespoke attack through a mass-exploited vendor flaw.
Okay, so synthesizing all of this for you, the listener, the central takeaway from today's briefing is that the era of implicit trust is over.
It's gone.
Threat actors are weaponizing the very tools and platforms we rely on. They're hijacking legitimate CMS platforms to serve fake CapKey CAs, exploiting the exhaustion of human users to trick them into executing Base64 code. They are manipulating search engine algorithms, using SEO poisoning to serve AI-assisted backdoors masquerading as vital developer tools. And they are exploiting vendor supply defaults to drop customized ransomware infrastructure right through trusted enterprise portals.
So the practical defenses require vigilance at every level. First, if you or your users are asked to copy and paste code into a terminal to prove you are human, stop immediately. It is a trap. TBTCOJs do not require command line execution.
Very true.
Second, if you are a developer, scrutinize your search engine results. High algorithmic ranking does not equal security. Rely on official vendor portals and verified digital signatures. And third, if you manage enterprise infrastructure, you must ruthlessly audit for shared secrets.
Check those templates.
Yes. Comb through your deployment templates and your web.config files. If you are relying on default vendor-supplied cryptographic keys, you are actively vulnerable to deserialization attacks today.
It requires a fundamental shift from passive browsing to active verification. Which brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with today. We've talked extensively about AI in this deep dive. Anthropic's Claude finding the ghost CMS vulnerability and LLMs being used to rapidly write the Minifast backdoor.
It's everywhere now.
We also explored how easily humans are tricked into pasting malicious code just to prove to a website that they aren't bots. As artificial intelligence becomes increasingly flawless at mimicking both legitimate software code and nuanced human behavior, will we soon reach a point where human verification systems like key PCHAs become entirely obsolete? And if they do, will we be left with absolutely no reliable way to prove to a machine that we are, in fact, human?
That is the defining architectural question for the next decade of the internet.
Something to mull over as you navigate your day. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay vigilant, question your assumptions, and we'll see you next time.